Good morning. I'm Todd Moe. Coming up this hour, a new poll shows that New Yorkers are closely divided among the Democratic candidates running for president. The city of Plattsburgh is weighing the costs and benefits of its four recreational facilities. The beach, the marina, the gym, the civic center, all are losing money.
At what point do you decide, well, I better replace the roof, because I'm sinking money into a money pit?
Also this morning, David Summerstein and Brian Mann send us an audio postcard from Jenkins Mountain near Paul Smith College.
We passed a couple, beautiful reflecting little beaver ponds.
And our North Country at Work segment looks at how to keep a small independent bookstore afloat in the Adirondacks. Stay tuned for the 8 o'clock hour. Good morning. This is North Country Public Radio, and you're listening to the 8 o'clock hour on this Tuesday. It's October 15th. I'm Todd Moe. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for supporting North Country Public Radio and programs like the 8 o'clock hour. The Weather Service says sunshine for much of our region, remaining partly cloudy along eastern Lake Ontario, highs today near 60, and light winds out of the southwest. Here's news from North Country Public Radio. A new poll released this morning by the Siena Research Institute found that New Yorkers are closely divided among the Democratic candidates running for president. Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden are tied at 21%, with Bernie Sanders close behind at 16%. Warren is performing best in upstate New York with 27% backing, while Biden fares better in New York City and the suburbs. Biden also fares better among New Yorkers when asked who would fare best against President Trump in the general election. 30% say Biden would be the strongest candidate. That same Siena poll found two-thirds of New Yorkers believe Congress is justified in opening an impeachment probe targeting President Trump. 83% of Democrats support the impeachment investigation. 1 in 4 Republicans also support the process. So far, 55% of New Yorkers support actually removing the president from office. Only 13% of Republicans agree. The city of Plattsburgh has four public places where people can get together for fun: the beach, the marina, the gym, and the civic center. But all four are losing money. In an effort to balance its budget, the city council presented a financial analysis of each facility at its meeting earlier this month. As Emily Russell reports, people packed to the meeting asking the city to consider ways to keep the four facilities open.
City Councilor Rochelle Armstrong took her seat at the center of Plattsburgh's council chambers. With a tap of the mallet, she welcomed the big crowd of people sitting in front of her.
Thank you all for coming. It's really gratifying to see such a crowd and a bunch of...
Before diving in, Armstrong offered a bit of an assurance. There would not be any final decisions made at the meeting.
This is not an axe-cutting session. This is an informational session.
Armstrong then went slide by slide, showing the crowd financial data collected on each of Plattsburgh's recreational facilities. She used that data to do a cost-benefit analysis, how much the city spends on each facility versus how much it makes. For example, the Crate Center, which hosts things like Comic-Con, trade shows, and sports games, it showed a net loss of $146,000 in 2018. That's without all the deferred maintenance projects, Armstrong said, like fixing the roof.
That's a huge thing. And at what point do you decide, well, I better replace the roof, because I'm sinking money into a money pit?
But to do that, to fix the roof and to bring the building up to date, Armstrong said, would cost $3.6 million. The city's gym is in a similar bind. It had a net loss of $275,000 last year. Armstrong says the gym needs $2.7 million in maintenance. But people at the meeting did not want to see the city get rid of either. One person suggested hiring a promoter for the Civic Center, saying that might bring in more revenue. It was the gym, though, that got the most passionate responses.
When I was 14 years old, I used to sneak in the gym.
Brad Miller is a Plattsburgh City police officer. He told the city council he'd go there to get away from his dad, who he says was a drunk.
It kept me out of trouble. I had people that were mentors. It made me into the person I am today.
Miller and others told the city council the rec center is more than just a gym.
The rec center provides us pickleball players, weightlifters, runners, whatever.
Jim Howard lives nearby in Morrisonville.
Provides us an opportunity for well-being. Not just health, but the social fabric of our community when we play together is amazing.
But the rec center and the civic center, the marina and the beach, they cost a lot to keep open. The city council expects Plattsburgh to lose more than $600,000 on all four of them this year. The council will make recommendations on the rec facilities at its meeting on November 7th. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio, Plattsburgh.
And just a note, Jim Howard is a member of NCPR's Executive Council. The state's Public Campaign Finance Commission met for several hours yesterday to discuss the nuts and bolts details of how to implement a matching public donor system for statewide races in New York. Karen DeWitt has details.
The commission spent several hours discussing how to implement a matching small donor public campaign finance system for statewide races. They reached consensus on a few issues that give an indication of how the final proposal due in December might look. They discussed contributions beginning at $5 and up to $250 could be matched by the public fund at a 6-to-1 ratio. A candidate for governor who opts into the system could receive up to $18 million in matching funds, $8 million for a primary and $10 million for a general election. That number is lower than the $30 million spent by Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was the winning candidate in 2018. The commissioners also discussed a $4 million cap for matching funds for candidates for attorney general and controller. Senate and assembly seats might be limited to matching funds of $750,000 per candidate. Commissioners said contributions to political parties might continue to be unlimited, though. The commission is also powerless to regulate independent expenditures or super PACs. That's due to Supreme Court decisions limiting regulation of independent expenditures. Commissioner Henry Berger, an election law attorney appointed by Governor Andrew Cuomo and the leaders of the legislature, says the aim is to set the amounts high enough to attract only serious candidates, but not make it so difficult as to discourage legitimate candidates.
What we're creating is meant, among other things, to change behavior. We want people going out and seeking the smaller contributions.
That's the whole point.
And we want them seeking them within their district.
Before the meeting, advocates for public campaign financing demonstrated outside.
Fair elections! Now!
The commission has also discussed whether to end the practice of fusion voting in New York. That allows candidates to be cross-endorsed by third parties and run on multiple ballot lines. Assemblyman David Buchwald says the commission should not be deciding the future of fusion voting and should stick to the commission's original purpose.
The fact that they've been more focused on banning fusion voting in New York shows that so far there's no indication that their heart is really in this endeavor that they've been passing.
The topic of fusion voting was not mentioned at the public meeting. Commissioners will meet to try to hash out more details in mid-November. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Police are investigating a racist and homophobic note posted last week at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. According to the university, the note was put up in a common room in one of the student dorms on Thursday. A statement from the school's vice chancellor called it a cowardly violation of human rights, saying it was meant to foster hate towards Indigenous and queer members of the university. CBC Toronto obtained a copy of the note, which included threats of violence and scalping. The university's Indigenous Student Center is hosting a sacred fire event until 10 o'clock this morning. The Native ritual is intended to provide support for anyone affected by the note. The University of Vermont is inviting community members to an Indigenous Peoples Day ceremony. The day-long event, which includes a celebration and education, takes place today, the day after Vermont's first official Indigenous Peoples Day, at locations around campus. Organizers say there'll be ceremonies with Abenaki chiefs and elders, workshops and panel discussions on Abenaki spirituality and history, a tour of the Fleming Museum of Art's Native American collection, and more. A handful of states, including Vermont, celebrated their first Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday as part of a trend to move away from a day honoring Christopher Columbus. The fall color this year just keeps going and going. It's still absolutely gorgeous, even in parts of the Adirondack High Country where the trees are slightly past their peak. We've already sampled some of that beauty over the last week with a canoe trip to the Chub River near Lake Placid and a hike up Catamount near Wilmington. This morning, David Summerstein and Brian Mann send an audio postcard from Jenkins Mountain near Paul Smith's College. It's a long journey, roughly 9 miles round trip, but the views are some of the best in the North Country.
So where are we? We are at Paul Smith. We just left the Paul Smith's Vic, and we're climbing this big, wide, basically a road almost feels like. It's very gentle. We're on our way to Jenkins Mountain, which I don't know anything about.
And I've never been up there either. And people rave about this little mountain.
Near peak fall colors right now. So super excited to see what it looks like, what the carpet looks like when we get up there.
Already just on the trail, leaves and kind of a classic fall day. My first impression of this is that it's just a lovely walk, which I, you know, hiking is sort of one thing, but just a really open path like this where you can walk side by side, really beautiful, but not intense. It's lovely.
We really are at walk in the woods level of hiking for sure.
Yeah.
We passed a couple, you know, beautiful reflecting little beaver ponds or leaves on the trees, sort of casting that nice glow all around us. Blue skies, perfect sun, but it's at the temperature where I keep on going right in between just a t-shirt and putting on a long sleeve t-shirt on top, where you can feel the crispness of autumn. We went from the old logging road to a more sort of typical single track trail, but it's following along this really long, appears to be like an S-curve.
We're walking through the woods, but then we're looking directly out into the canopy of lower trees. Yeah. So it's a neat combination.
It's almost like we're on like a sort of elevated walkway, yeah. You know.
The skyline trail.
The skyline trail.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. We're just walking through color, just on the ground beneath us, leaves patterned and looking out now because we're up a little higher. You can really look into the reds and yellows. There's a mix in the ferns of radiant green, almost spring-like green. But then that bronze color, that's really a sign of fall here. So glad to get up here. Yeah. So funny how these places in the park that I've just never gotten to over the years. Oh my God. David, look at that.
Well, here we are, very close to the top, if not at the top. All the colors, the reds and the yellows. Nice and beautiful sunny day. Some really beautiful rivers and lakes. And there's the St. Regis Fire Tower.
And there are just chickadees all around us. Yeah. Really like burnt red in the foreground, yellows and greens in the distance.
All the little jewels of the St. Regis canoe area. Little dots of water.
So pretty. Jenkins Mountain, what do you think?
Wow, it was just perfect for this day. Perfect for a real jaunt. Like, this was not a hard hike, but an amazing, amazing view.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, like new places to explore in a different part of the park.
I'm Brian Mann, North Country Public Radio.
And I'm David Summerstein at the Paul Smith's Vic on the Jenkins Mountain Trail.
And there are photos and more information about the hike on our website this morning, ncpr.org. For North Country Public Radio, I'm Todd Moe. Love those chickadees.
It's been a great fall for chickadees, Todd. That was a lot of fun, and it was great to get out with David. ncpr.org/give, that's how to support that kind of storytelling, the kind that gives you the news and information you need, but also the joy and the sense of place. Thanks to James Callahan from who summers in the Adirondacks, says, you give us our daily dose of the North Country here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thanks to Jim Fryer from Hanawha Falls, friends in Johnsonville, New York, and Brockville, Ontario, supporting this morning. Coming in at ncpr.org/give. It's a joy to do this, to tell these stories, to hear these voices, to hear those chickadees. And if you think that's part of your morning, part of your day, part of the value of living in the North Country, please, 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 we need your passion, your generosity. Those dollars really do just go right into the nuts and bolts, right into the power, the gas that gets us out there, the microphones, all those basic things. It's really down to earth, and we're good friends, and we love being part of your life and your community. Be part of ours right now. ncpr.org/give. And thank you, and back to you, Todd.
Thanks so much for your support this hour, folks. ncpr.org/give. We really appreciate it. In a world of mega bookstores and online giants like Amazon, how does a small independent bookstore make it? Jesse Fisher, the owner of The Book Nook in Saranac Lake, will tell you this: never take a vacation.
I've been working for 2 years straight, pretty much.
North Country at Work's Amy Feyerreisel visited The Book Nook earlier this year. Here's her story.
Jessie Fisher is in her late 20s, has sandy blonde hair with a blue streak, and is all smiles when she talks about her shop.
I don't know. There's no words to explain. Like, it's just a lot of joy being surrounded by books and people enjoy it. It's kind of like I started a little club in Saranac, like a big giant book club.
Bookshop owner is pretty far from her original career path. Fisher is from Montauk in Long Island. She came here for Paul Smith's college, where she studied fish and wildlife science. But after 3 years of underpaid seasonal research positions, she was tired.
I looked around Saranac Lake, and it's always been one of my, like, bucket list kind of things to open a bookstore, and everything fell into place that I finally said, I'm going to do it. I said, screw it, let's do it, let's try it.
She opened less than a year later, in August of 2017, on Broadway Street. Walking by, you might not notice it. The storefront and single window is tucked between Cape Air's offices and a local taco joint. Step inside, and it feels a little like being inside a bookcase. The shop is lined with floor-to-ceiling wooden shelves. It's the size of a large bedroom.
If you go into a Barnes & Noble, their fiction section is like 10 times bigger than my shop.
But this is by design. Jessie says the reason her bookshop works is because it's so small. She can't offer endless stock, but she can offer recommendations and conversation.
People coming in and talking about the love of books is just easy. It's a nice conversation. And then you're like, oh, did you read this one? No, did you read that one? And it's like book club. I have this one lady. We have the same mentality on books. Like, she'll come in and like, what are you reading? I'm like, I'm reading this. She's like, all right, I want that.
Small was also the only way she could make it work financially. Jessie is the single employee. She's at the shop's checkout counter Tuesdays through Sundays from 8 or 9 in the morning until 6:30 at night, 4 on Sundays. Mondays are her weekend.
But it's not even a day off. I'm running around doing other stuff for the business that I can't do after the day.
From the counter, she researches and orders books, normally in pretty small quantities. There's no back room, no storage. But she crams around 1,500 books into the space and hits a lot of genres. Fiction and nonfiction, biographies to cookbooks to thrillers. There's even a small section for all things 80K, a sacrifice at the altar of tourism.
What locals don't want is like everything Adirondack theme. We live here. We don't want to see it constantly, but you want to also find that happy medium for your tourists that are coming in that want the Adirondack experience.
I visit Jessie in the late spring when there's not a tourist or anyone else to be seen, but she's unfazed. There's a fairly predictable ebb and flow.
March and April is just dead. You're not going to see, some days I don't see anyone walking around. I understand it's cold. You don't want to walk around. Busy season starts when the kids are no longer in school. So about mid-June to about October, and then it slows down. And then Christmas, obviously, the biggest one to get you through winter. Christmas is nonstop. It's like a summer day in July all month long.
A lot of business comes from tourists, but it also comes from locals. She's got some pretty devoted regulars.
One girl from the high school, she has a gift card. Her mom comes in and recharges the gift card every week for her. So I think that was really cool. It's because she's a book nerd. She comes in all excited every week. Like, we start talking for hours.
While we're talking, one of her regulars calls in.
Book nerd. Hi, how are you?
They chat for a while. Jessie looks up a couple of titles on her computer and says she'll put in an order.
So what just happened just now? Was she just calling because she wanted you to order some books?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Turns out the customer lives in Keene Valley and makes weekly orders.
She asked for a little bit tougher books for us to find, books that are slowly getting out of print, but I try to find them as best I can. And she has a budget, so I tell her what's available, is this okay, and always asking. And I always tell people the price, too, because some books do get expensive.
Those prices are why, while the shop is one of Jessie's childhood dreams come true, it's also a fight to stay afloat. She says the Book Nook has worked so far because she's gotten local support.
I think it's a small town thing, like the community base. So it's, I know our prices are a lot more expensive and we can't price match Amazon. And I feel bad saying that to people. But the money you spend in Saranac Lake stays in Saranac Lake. It helps benefit other people in Saranac Lake and other businesses. And allows us to do kids events, donate to local organizations where Amazon won't do that and doesn't really care about your community.
Jessie says she's committed to Saranac Lake and to keeping a local bookstore open. For now, small is working. But she'd still really like a vacation. In Saranac Lake, for North Country Public Radio's North Country at Work project, I'm Amy Feierisel.
For a look inside the Book Nook, check out the online story at ncpr.org.